Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, today we're going to be experiencing adventure of a type, adventure of research and history. The book we're going to be talking about is History is Wrong. That's the title of it. Eric von Däniken is the author. He is very famous, especially for the book Chariots of the Gods. But today we have with us as a spokesperson for his book, Giorgio Tsoukalos. Giorgio, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on, Donna. I appreciate the opportunity very much.
This book was so intriguing to me because of a compilation of 50 years of research and investigation that he put in this publication. But I want to talk about Eric for just a moment, and then I want to talk about you. Eric was born in Switzerland in 1935. He has a very, very strong belief in extraterrestrial visitors. And when he came out with the book Chariots of the Gods, it just had an effect that was phenomenal. His books have been translated into 28 different languages. 63 million copies have been sold plus. And he's always out there talking and lecturing. He's been in documentaries. He's the co-founder of the AASRA, which is the abbreviation for Archaeology, Astronauts, and SETI Research Association. And he writes regularly for Legendary Times magazine. I don't even know how he has time to get any sleep with all of this activity that he does. How did the two of you come together, Giorgio? What was it that brought your lives into a patterning where you have become his spokesperson?
Well, one saying is I was literally at the right place at the right time, because even though I come from a long line of Greek Americans, for part of my life I grew up in Switzerland. And as you've just mentioned, Eric was born in Switzerland and is a Swiss citizen, and that's where he lives, that's where he writes all of his books. And I had the great privilege growing up traveling the planet with my parents, and then later I did a lot of my own traveling still to this day. And my parents made sure to go to all the ancient sites and to the museums, you know, in all the countries mm-hmm. and the continents that we were at. But then my grandma said, you know, you've just been taught the mainstream viewpoint of this particular site, but let me introduce you to the works of Eric von Däniken, and that there's an alternative viewpoint on history. And long story short, I, in my young teenager, started to go to some of Eric's lectures in Germany and in Switzerland, and I became friends with some of Eric's friends, and then I became friends with him, and back in 1998, the predecessor magazine, Ancient Skies, ceased publication, and Eric called me up and he said, look, we don't have a successor magazine in the English-speaking world. Would you like to do it? And the rest, as they say, was or is history. So we've been now together publishing Legendary Times for 11 years.
Amazing. Now, your grandmother was such a woman of what I think perceptive observation, and for her to bring forth this information, because of her generation, typically people wouldn't communicate about a lot of things. They just would sort of keep to themselves. They didn't want to be considered out of the norm. But how exciting you had a member of your family that said, I want you to be aware of other points of information.
Well, this was actually, you know, to us, this was, ordinary dinner table conversation. Even my mom, still to this day, maintains the viewpoint that everything that is around us today, all the technology and culture and all of this, that it's merely a repetition of history,
mm-hmm.
that everything has existed in the remote past, and that is exactly where the ancient astronaut hypothesis come in about, you know, possible extraterrestrial visitations and things like this. So, yes, I'm very fortunate that, you know, I grew up in a very bohemian household where, you know, viewpoints like this were the norm.
And questioning and examining.
Yes.
I think that is such a wonderful environment to be in because people are saying, you don't have to agree with me, but at least let's talk about this. What is your position?
And that is, yes,
I think it's marvelous.
Yeah, and that is exactly what also what Legendary Times magazine is about, and also Eric's new book, History is Wrong. That nowhere in the pages of History is Wrong or in the pages of Legendary Times do we ever say, this is how it is, you must believe us, and if you don't, well, you know, screw you.
Mm-hmm.
Because the moment you sound dogmatic, you are as crazy as the mainstream that says that we're the crazies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's always, look, here is the evidence, here's the interpretation. If you agree with it, great. If you don't, whatever, doesn't matter.
Very good attitude. I like that. I think that produces innovative thinking. I think it produces curiosity. And too frequently, what you're describing as mainstream says, fit in a box. And if you don't fit in a box, well, we just don't want anything to do with you. Now, that's not new about humanity. That's been around as long as humans have been around. But I want to start off because the book mentioned something to me that I was not familiar with,
mm-hmm.
and that is the Voynich manuscript. And for my listeners that maybe have never heard of it, it's spelled V-O-Y-N-I-C-H. And he goes into, Eric does, some information about this. And I know he's been talking about this stuff for years, and you like to think that everybody knows about it, but there's a lot of people that don't, including myself. So this was quite interesting. Why is the Voynich manuscript so significant?
Well, it is significant insofar as to this day, the book has not been translated into any modern language that we have today because it's pretty much indecipherable. And, you know, it is really something else because people have truly tried to translate it and they were unable to do this. Now, here's the interesting thing that the manuscript right now is at Yale University and they are refusing to date the vellum on which the manuscript was written on because out of fear that it might be a hoax or a forgery. But I think that's a very lame excuse because I say the faster something is debunked, the faster something is exposed as a hoax, the more it strengthens our alternative view on history
mm-hmm.
because the more fraudulent stuff that we eliminate, the stronger it makes our case because there are certain mysteries that despite what the debunkers are saying, have not been debunked, have not been solved, and there's still big question marks. Now, another interesting thing about the Voynich manuscript is the fact that it also contains many, many drawings. And the drawings, not only are they quite beautiful, but also they are quite mysterious in what they try to represent. I mean, some things look like surgery, some things look like the Fountain of Youth or something like this. But at the same time, in Ecuador, in South America, there is a legendary gold collection by Father Carlos Crespi, who unfortunately has passed on.
Mm-hmm.
However, he has this collection of gold plates or metal plates with gold plating on them. And some of the symbols that are found in the Voynich manuscript can be found on those Ecuadorian ancient artifacts. Now, that is quite extraordinary that, something like this, a correlation exists.
It's so intriguing when you think how recently there have been digs that have surfaced, and they go, well, this shouldn't be here. It's like a dig that was done in China by accident, and we had a display in Seattle. This was a number of years ago. My husband and I walk into the art exhibit, and the first thing that we look at when we see this information about this finding in China, it looked exactly, a lot of the stuff looked a great deal like the art in South America that the Mayans did or the Aztecs did. And we go, okay, that means global trade was going on. This is something here. So we just made this, you know, just this observation, and we're not archaeologists. I don't think it takes too much brain power to be able to make correlations unless you've never seen anything like this before. Phenomenal artwork. And apparently this village that these people that had occupied this area in China that nobody even knew that there were Caucasian peoples that were in this particular area, their artwork is just as skilled as anything we did have done today. Their metallurgy was just awesome. They couldn't believe it. So this is on display in a museum, and everybody's ooing and awing over the beauty of it, but they're not making any connections to the best of our knowledge. And we just say, but it's very logical.
Well, yes, of course. You know? And you mentioned, you know, something very extraordinary, that is, you know, it doesn't take a lot of brain power. And, Donna, it really doesn't. That's the thing, that, you know, some of these things are so crystal clear that just to the untrained eye, you know, something is not entirely correct with what we're being told happened in our past. And hence the title of the book, History is Wrong, because whatever we've been taught in school, whether it be elementary or high school or whatever, but also especially in college, you know, some of the things that we're taught, you know, that have been absolutely disproven, that, you know, Columbus is the first discoverer of America. I mean, that has been totally disproven, yet, you know, many, many moons ago, that's what I had to study in school. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous that, you know, but the status quo, there is a paradigm shift happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the radio shows such as this one 40, 50 years ago would have been absolutely impossible. But
true.
Now, you know, I think that humanity is waking up to an alternative possibility, to an alternative viewpoint, and, you know, slowly but surely the pieces are all coming together.
And what's fascinating is the corroboration of this. It's not just hokey-dokey out there. It's, you know, Eric, 50 years ago, when he came out with Chariots of the God, he was lambasted. He just was literally torn apart, and he thought, but this is very logical. It is very hard when you are going, and this is nothing new, when you are going against established authority that says, well, this is, we know this is to be absolute fact. Well, no, it is not fact. And there is so much that in many, many ways has been suppressed. And I'm with you. I think bring it out. Let's examine it. Let's look at it. Let's not be afraid.
Well, and here's the interesting thing, that 40 years ago in 1968 and 1970, Chariots of the Gods came first out in Germany, or in a German-speaking world, in 1968, and then in the U.S. or in the English-speaking world, it hit the market in 1970. Back then, the discussion alone whether or not extraterrestrial life exists was virtually taboo, and not many of the scientists actually talked about it. And the few that did, you know, not all of them, about 80 to 90% were like, no, impossible, extraterrestrial life does not exist, and, you know, we're alone in the universe. Now, fast forward to 2009, and you'd be very hard-pressed to find any scientist today in the world who would say extraterrestrial life does not exist. It's
mm-hmm.
basically an accepted fact that ETs or aliens do exist. However, the big thing, the big hurdle, the big obstacle that still exists today is that while scientists pretty much anonymously agree that extraterrestrial life exists, they maintain very strongly that this extraterrestrial life could have never been here or have visited us.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, not to, you know, make a prediction or anything, but I would say 20 years from now, they will side with the ancient astronaut hypothesis and say, yeah, sure, mm-hmm. they could have been here in the remote past, absolutely, because all the evidence points towards such visits.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so much good information in this book, History is Wrong, and it's okay to challenge it, too, because I think we need to think, you know, just think, and be willing to say, all right, if we are able ourselves to go to the moon, we're sending robots to Mars, we are looking at how we have advanced with our technology, so we're aware of many, many galaxies. It is terribly arrogant for us to assume that we are the end-all of end-all. And I can remember back in the 70s talking with a scientist, and this man was brilliant, absolutely a genius. He and his colleagues saw so many things, and one day we were talking about some space photos that had come in because I was working for a firm that was doing photos that came in from outer space. They had the contract for it. And I was just admiring the beauty, and at that time what they were doing would be considered very primitive, but they were able to get some things back from space. And his comment to me, wouldn't elaborate on it, his comment to me was, there is so much that people have not a clue about that we can't even talk about. And I just looked at him, you know, and I'm just with my big brown eyes looking at him and go, gee, will you tell me some more?
Uh-huh.
And he said, nope, not going to do that. But no. I've heard this from more than one person.
Oh,
as
sure.
a scientist, I heard it at a dinner party. A woman whose son was directly involved with NASA said, my son knows this, that, or the other, and I could hardly wait to talk to her, and I couldn't do it because the party was over, and I didn't have her number or anything else, and I was so disappointed because her son had discussed with the family things that were top secret. And I think that the more we can explore, as Eric has, and you know, there's Gene Roddenberry, I think, laid a very good foundation for this as far as Star Trek went and the things that have come through subsequently. And I just think the man had an insight and a vision and a perceptiveness. It was just phenomenal. And it was conveyed so many years before this was changed. And I see it even in a lot of the things that are produced today. I don't think people realize how this is unfolding, if you will. But I want to go back to Father Crespi for a moment, because
mm-hmm.
this was an eccentric man to a degree, and he was a pack rat when it came to these artifacts. And Eric was able to find these plates, like you mentioned. There were 56 of them that had all of this information, and they knew how to, with their technology of their time, layer gold and do things so that stuff would hold true. And this, it, you know, it lasts for centuries, and that's exactly what has happened. Could you tell me what's happened to that collection? Who took it?
The Ecuadorian State Bank, and the most valuable of those pieces are actually on display at the Gold Museum in Quito, Ecuador, in the capital.
Oh.
So anyone can actually go and check those pieces out. And so in that case, they really did a good job in preserving those pieces. Now, and this is a very interesting point that you bring up, because, you know, many debunkers are saying, well, you know, those pieces really are modern forgeries, they're fakes, and they're not really valuable at all. Well, if that truly were the case, then, you know, the State Bank would have not showed up after Father Crespi's death, and they would have not picked up those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, I mean, you know, again, it doesn't take much brain power to figure this all out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they were really worthless pieces that you would just, you know, leave around, they would have never shown up to take those things and preserve them, you know, and put them in you know, temperature-controlled display cases and stuff like this.
Well, I just think it's such fascinating reading, and I really think there's been a lot that in this book Eric has brought out. Now, one area of the world which I have been aware of for a long time that has kept extremely good records is India. And
yeah.
India's culture is thousands and thousands and thousands of years old. And there are records in India on chariots that flew in the sky, all kinds of things. And one of the examples that Eric gives, which I think is so true, and it applies to just about any legend that there is, and there's usually a truth in those legends, is that when someone has lived through an event, they will often share it with their family. And then when storytelling always has been the best form of communication, the next generation will repeat the story to the subsequent generation. And it'll go on and on, and it will become colored or shift in its change or its description, but the basic essence of the truth is there. Eric was able to go into India. How did he get access to these old, old records? Lots of times, you know, it's like the Catholic Church. They have stuff down in their basements, if you will, that they don't let anybody look at.
Not in India. If you, Donna, want to go to India and study those ancient texts, by all means, everything is available to you. In fact, they have so many palm leaves that are inscribed in ancient Sanskrit and Hindi that they don't even have enough people to translate them. So they would, if you knew Sanskrit, they would hand you, you know, 10 pounds of palm leaves and say, here, knock yourself out. This is the problem with India today, where unfortunately, and I have many Indian friends, and they're saying to me that India is slowly losing being India by, you know, through modernization and globalization and all this. So they are no longer, and of course, I'm speaking in very broad strokes. I'm not, you know, saying that this is how it is. But they are losing interest in their culture and spirituality and origins and things like this. However, India, you're absolutely correct, is a treasure trove of ancient astronaut-related stuff. In fact, one of my favorite sayings is that, you know, if I were to live in India, I'd be out of a job, because everyone over there, to them, it's totally normal to say that, yes, the gods of ancient India at one point were real. They were physical beings, and yes, they did have, you know, flying chariots and you know, amazing machines that were, with which they were able to travel through the air and things like this. So, I mean, yeah, ancient India is absolutely spectacular with references to ancient astronauts, and many of the ancient texts like the Ramayana or the Mahabharata, the Rig Vedas and all this, it reads like Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It's really amazing. It's total science fiction. But, of course, as the ancient astronaut hypothesis maintains, all based in reality or some form of reality. Like you said, over time, legends shift, stuff gets added to it, you know, embellishments. But at its true core, the ancient astronaut hypothesis says that this has to do with ancient visitations by flesh and blood extraterrestrials.
It's really intriguing, and I know in the Tibetan culture this is something that with the lamas that went through training, all of this was given to them so that they could have an understanding that this isn't the only place. And usually it was kept pretty close because of the cycles of humanity's growth, its dark ages, its self-destruction, and things are hidden and sheltered and then they come out again maybe 1,000 or so years later, and people have evolved to the point where they're not thinking like Cracker Jack boxes, but they are actually trying to evaluate things and open to research. I liked a sentence that Eric put in his book. He said, there's no vaccination against thinking. Ideas know no boundaries and no censorship. And what's more, ideas have a dangerous tendency to spread like wildfire. And I think those are words that are very true. Ideas can spread like wildfire if they fit. If people say, yes, that's something, I mean, we look at what's happening around the world today. There's an old, old patterning that was maybe partially okay for a few hundred years, and now it doesn't fit anymore. There's a number of things we're having to shift and change in our thinking about, as well as our actions.
Well, yeah.
And that, you know, I liked what he said, connecting the past with the future is unthinkable for single-track minds, but the two are nevertheless utterly intertwined, and anyone who hasn't figured that out yet had better learn quickly, because the future is about to be overrun by the past. And that just is complementary to the old saying, if you study history and you see what happened and you don't learn from it, the past will repeat itself. And that has been stated by so many people over the years. It's being stated now in so many different various ways. When Eric wrote this book, he talks about Enoch. What is it that he really wanted to be able to reach people with? He's written so many books. He talks around the world. 50 years of his life has been dedicated to research and investigation. What is this book for?
Well, Enoch is a very compelling piece of text where it used to be, emphasis on used to be, a part of the Bible. And then at the Council of Nicaea, it was deemed too dangerous, too explosive, and so the Book of Enoch was one of many books that were then excluded from the Bible. Now, anyone can go and get the Book of Enoch today at the library or at bookstores, and it's quite fascinating because it is an eyewitness report of Enoch. He was one of the patriarchs visiting, quote-unquote, the highest of the highest, i.e. God, and interacting with angels. Now, the ancient astronaut theory is very clear on saying that whatever was described as God in the Old Testament was not God at all. It was a misunderstood, misinterpreted, flesh-and-blood extraterrestrial that our ancestors thought was God. One thing we have to remind ourselves is that our ancestors were as smart as we are today. They were not dumb, intellectually speaking. However, their frame of reference, especially in regards to technology, was different than ours today. So they didn't comprehend that this being descended from the sky in a machine. But they thought, oh, wow, this is divine intervention. Here comes this deity. We better bow down and worship this guy. So the angels, of course, were also flesh and blood extraterrestrials, one of which taught Enoch in astronomy, one in engineering, one in mathematics. So basically, Enoch went to up in their space station and essentially went through a intensive course of all different various, you know, disciplines in science. Mm-hmm. And he is very clear in describing that in the Book of Enoch. And anyone with a half a brain can actually read this. That, you know, and why should we today, if it says one thing, why should we reinterpret it as something else that it is not? So what we have there is a eyewitness account of Enoch's abduction into outer space.
It is fascinating reading, and the way he presents it is very, very well done. And I think in our world today, there is so much that we need to be able to look at with clarity. And I see the quote in here by William James, "A great many people think they are thinking when they're merely rearranging their prejudices." It really takes courage to be able to look at a whole different venue of thinking and say, all right, let me explore it, let me see, let me feel, let me observe. And this is what's happening at a very rapid rate. And I think that there are many mature people who are saying it's time now to speak what we know about, and it's time now to be able to move along and give up the make-believe, and let's get down to earth and let's get real with what we are aware of. And I think that's one of the gifts that Eric gives in his book, History is Wrong. I think that The man has dedicated his life to a great deal of communication with others, not being afraid to be challenged. You have also. And, Giorgio, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Now, do you have a website that people can go to?
Absolutely. It's legendarytimes.com. And if you type in under free information your name and address, we'll send you a free copy of Legendary Times magazine, which, by the way, has no ads in there. We're membership supported only, so that those 64 pages in Legendary Times, it's all articles that cannot be found anywhere else. So what a short time, Donna. We should do this longer next time. Half an hour goes by like, you know, 30 seconds.
I know, but it was so enjoyable, and the material is wonderful. Please give my regards to Eric. Tell him I'm so glad that we had the opportunity to chat with you, but maybe sometime in the future I would like to be able to chat with him as well.
I will absolutely do that.
Thank you, and I think both of you men have dedicated yourself to something that is out of the norm, but by golly, it sure is something worth exploring. My guest today has been Giorgio Tsoukalos, and the website for this wonderful, wonderful publication, Legendary Times, is legendarytimes.com. You can get a free copy if you subscribe, and it is just all kinds of thought. Doesn't mean they're right. It doesn't mean they're wrong. But isn't it good to have something that creates a patterning of what if in your mind, allows your curiosity to grow, and through reading the book, History is Wrong, you can walk through its pages to different parts of the world, different parts of information and resources, and there's just so much in the back of the book. It's just all kinds of references that you can do. Eric von Daniken is the author, and again, Giorgio Tsoukalos has been my guest. Thank you, Giorgio, so much for being with me today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break. Just sit back, relax. We'll be coming back in a moment.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are open, and if you would like to call in and chat with me, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Now, all you need to do is just dial this number, which is toll-free no matter where you are. It's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And if you're a first-time listener to the Donna Sebo Show, I want to welcome you. And all you need to do if you'd like to chat with me is give me your first name or your initial. Of course, I love to know where you're calling in from. And then after that, I will be happy to tell you what I perceive. And if you have a special question, if you have a dream you want interpreted, or you have something in the way of a paranormal experience you'd like to discuss with me, I would love to do it. So again, here's the toll-free number, 888-815-9756. Now, I do want to let those of you who are in the state of Washington, I want to let you know that on September the 26th, I'm going to be doing an appearance at the Boeing Parapsychology Fair, or Expo, actually, that's what it is. And this is something that's done semi-annually. And typically, I'm only able to participate in this wonderful event during the fall because of the way my schedule goes. So I'm going to be there along with a number of other people that are really going to be there to help you understand certain things. I'll be giving talks. They're going to have a number of different speakers. But this is being held at Kent Commons, and you can go on the website. This is Kent, Washington, the city it'll be in, but Kent Commons is the name of the facility. You can go to their website, and that's bepcweb.org, and you can get all the details. The hours are from 9 until 5, and it's just a wonderful day. And at my booth, I'm going to have all kinds of books. I'm having to purge my library. I'm running out of space, so I've got to remove some of the books from my library, but you can be one of those lucky people that will be able to get some fascinating pieces of material to read. If you're a reader like I am and you just want to add to your own library, this is going to be a very good time to do it. But there's services there that will be available. There's readers. There's going to be speeches. There's going to be all kinds of products, good food, and more than anything else, the most wonderful individuals in an environment that you can interact with. It's very personal, very warm, very friendly, and it's just a joy to interact with the people. So mark it on your calendar, September the 26th, that's a Saturday, and Kent, Washington at Kent Commons. So be sure to go to their website, bepcweb.org, and you'll find all the information that you need. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's the toll-free number. Give me a call, and I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Chocolate is a favorite of so many people. And science is always, when it comes to food, looking for different ways to be able to make products better. And I know there's a lot of controversy about many things, but let's face it, people in general are having food availability that 50 years ago just wasn't there. And so today we live in an intriguing world, and the world of chocolate is expanding in a manner and way that I don't know that anybody had thought it would expand to. Teco, a San Francisco chocolate maker, has among its staff a former NASA technologist and a cacao expert with a degree in tropical botany. They are betting that science is going to take chocolatey bliss to a new level. Now, the company is pronounced CHO. It's distributing portable flavor labs. Have you ever heard of one of those? Well, they're on so many different sites with food companies. They have thermometers, they've got pH sensors and other equipment. They're distributing them to cacao farmers in Peru so they can experiment with processing and a fermentation to create higher quality beans and thereby get a better price for their beans. Meanwhile, at Cho's California factory, the control settings on the chocolate making equipment can be monitored remotely through an iPhone application. It's just incredible what we've been able to evolve into. So they say all four of their wonderful chocolate. They call them cultivations. They have a fruity, a citrus, a nutty, and a chocolatey. Produce flavors in the mouth that really are exciting to people that have tried it. But they say, be sure you try the citrus one first for its balance of tartness and sweet zest. So for you, your chocolate lovers, look up the company T-C-H-O, Cho, and you will find something rather unique in the world of chocolate. It's been around for so long, and there really is a difference in beans, and that is what it is all about. You know, nature has her own way of making changes, but throughout history, even thousands of years ago, people were working with creating hybrids in grains and with animals because things change. Environments change. Nutritional aspects change. And we're not the first ones on this planet that have done experimentation and have worked with saying, what is this good? Is this bad? How can we make something better? What can we do? Today's world, we are more aware, I think, of being in a position of observation, but understanding that when we do make changes, we have to think about what the consequences can be. And sometimes it takes us a while to be able to determine whether those consequences are good or whether they're not so good and what we can do to improve them. That's an ongoing process. It really is an ongoing process, and it's something that is going to be there forever. There's never going to be a perfect anything. It can't be. Life is in constant motion, and we're going to make breakthroughs on many levels. In fact, that was my theme of my newsletter this month, and it'll be up on my website pretty soon, but this is something that when I wrote my editorial, breaking through is something that all of us have to do on one level or another, whether it's in science, whether it's in our personal life, whether it's in our business understanding, career development. There are always those levels that we come to that are sort of like plateaus, and we feel like there's something else that we can do that's going to be better. There's something we can do for ourselves to improve our skills, our abilities. Where else can we go? What can we explore? What can we do? And as I mentioned, it's an ongoing process. You're never going to get there. But isn't that exciting in a way? Because there's so much to look forward to. Whether you are 2 years old or 220, it doesn't make any difference. If you have that love of learning, that curiosity, that excitement that is within you that says, there's something else I can be a part of. Great, I can do something that is going to make a difference. You come up with an idea. Maybe you expand your own level of knowledge, but you move forward. And every time we do that as individuals, there is that ripple effect because we come in contact with people throughout our lives. That when we're sitting and talking with them and they maybe are in a certain modality, they've never been able to go beyond a certain modality, you introduce something to them. It's challenging. I had a conversation with a gentleman. This was a week ago. This man has such psychic ability. He could be a remote viewer quite easily. He's had out-of-body experiences. And this is someone that's so highly educated, and yet he would say, well, you know, we're not going to be able to do such and so. And I said, what makes you think that? Well, this is what it is. Well, he has got these modalities of education that he's bought into. I said, that's not true. He said, well, this is sort of scary. I said, no, the only reason it's scary to you is because you haven't had anybody you could talk to about it to whom it's not scary. It's a part of life. It is a part of living. It's part of natural experience. So we had the most interesting conversation. Now, I can tell you my educational level, degree-wise, is nowhere close to what this man has. Yet there was a wonderful level of communication, and he was open to that communication because he didn't know how to answer the question. And we just discussed everything from various levels of physics to meditation. It was amazing. It was wonderful. And he was surprised because he had not encountered anyone with all of the environments that he'd been in, very few people that could hold a conversation intelligently about intuitive capacities with people. And I felt so privileged to be able to do it. But remember, we're all growing. I don't know it all. You're not ever going to know it all. And isn't that wonderful? This is Donna Sebo. If you want to give me a call, 888-815-9756 is the number to call right now. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. And again, the newsletter did go out yesterday on the 1st, and so if you would like to be on the mail list and would like to receive a copy of the newsletter, just send me an email to donna@delphiinternational.com. That's DELPHI international.com. I wanted to share some information today about manners. And you may say, gee, Donna, what's bringing this up? You don't talk about this typically. My husband and I were out walking Kinsey and Victor. For those of you who are regular listeners, you know those are our two Scotties. Well, when you have dogs, this is a routine that you do. We're out walking, and we came just a half a block away into a situation that my husband and I really, we so rarely encounter it, we were just shocked. But it was some young people that were using racial remarks against each other. It was so derogatory. They were screaming and yelling. There were some young women there, and they were encouraging the guys to fight. And I'm watching this, and I thought, I wonder if they realize how they appear to other people. And these were young people, but they were so obnoxious, they were so rude, and yet I can remember thinking when I was observing this, how it wouldn't surprise me if a police car drove up, if someone called this in, because it is so bad. And if you've ever been in an environment where people will get really mouthy, they'll use all kinds of words that are vulgar, that you go, what is it with them? And it's like they're not thinking. It's like nobody has ever taught them any manners. And I just thought it would create a situation that what I was observing, because I used to work for a police department, what I was observing was something that within a few minutes could escalate into a knockdown, drag-out, perhaps a very, very violent situation. And I was observing this, and I thought, where is it that these people have brought this into their space? Why do they think this is acceptable behavior? When I shared the story with a neighbor, he said, you know, I was talking with someone that has a particular background and had worked for a police department, and they said, this is like a subculture, and this behavior in this subculture is acceptable. Well, it really is challenging because it works against these people in a way, and especially with these young people. It's like you want to pull them up by their ears and shake the space between it quite violently and saying, is your brain in place? But manners are something that have to be taught. They are something that has to be taught. And I came across this wonderful short article, and I thought I would share it. Judith Martin wrote a book called Miss Manners Guide to Excruciatingly Correct Behavior. And in today's world, it's not taught. It really isn't. There was a time when in schools and in church and in society in general, there was the expectation of good manners. Now, I'm not saying everybody was perfect. Far from it. But you had to know what the status quo was. And these are some tips that they gave to behave like a human being even when you're tested. And fortunately, this one individual that was being verbally accosted, I think, had enough of an awareness not to respond to this individual's attitude. And believe it or not, this was all over a bag of potato chips, according to what we were hearing. This is what was said by Miss Manners. Presume goodwill. This gives the other person a face-saving way to change his or her behavior. And any diplomat will tell you that the way to negotiate it is to give people a graceful way to do what you want them to do. And don't fight rudeness with rudeness. And that's what we were observing yesterday. When people encounter rude behavior in others, they often retaliate with rude behavior, and this doubles the amount of rudeness. It doesn't reduce it. Try to stay calm. In today's world, for some reason, the people have this attitude they're supposed to come out swinging. We have to control our tempers. That is what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to give in to your emotions. And it's a discipline. It is something we have to be taught. Also, if you're getting something from a stranger, something minor, ignore the rude behavior. If it's from a spouse, a friend, or a coworker, address it in a polite, clear, positive way. And if you've got children, teach manners early. Children are less likely to become narcissistic and abusive adults. And I think when we can understand that this is a standard and expectation, it's very important to be aware of that. Because there are those people that they just don't know what else to do with their minds or their mouth. And it just runs like diarrhea out of them. And you just stand there and you're sort of stunned because you wonder, what planet did they come from? But regardless, it is something that happens. And I just thought I would share that with you because when we observed this yesterday, it was really quite a surprise because it's not something we encounter very often. But here were some young people that were displaying it. And we said, this isn't really very positive. And it doesn't mean that they're stupid. It just means they are unaware of what they are giving in the way of an image to other people. And this is something that people need to be aware of. You never have a second chance to make a first impression. And that holds true, especially if you're out job hunting, if you are in social environments, when you are around others, your behavior is a reflection of how you think and how you feel. So I think manners, absolutely, they need to be brought back big time. That was an experience that I would not choose to repeat again. Donna Sebo here. I know we're just about out of time. I do want to let you know I am on the road traveling. Tomorrow and Friday, we will be running the Best of Donna shows. You're going to be listening to Conga Serenade by Neil Diamond's drummer, Eric King Arison. He's going to be on. And also, we're going to be talking with Tim O'Brien with Ripley's Believe It or Not. Two wonderful programs I know that you'll enjoy hearing. And if you missed them the first time they came around, you're not going to be unhappy hearing them tomorrow and Friday. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever, ever let anybody tell you that you do not have the right to be an individual, that you do not have the right to think outside the box. That is your right. And if you find something that nobody else has found, talk about it. Be willing to explore. There's a wonderful world of opportunity that's out there, regardless of the hard times that might be going on. Remember, there's hard times going on someplace, somewhere, at all times, ever present in this planet, on this planet of ours. This is Donna Siebel. Let your light shine. We'll talk to you. I'll be back live on Monday. Enjoy the next 2 days and the shows. I know that they are going to be very much a special part of your life and your day. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.